Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
When the news broke, it was both surprising and not at all surprising. I'm talking about Gronk, Rob Gronkowski, coming out of retirement to become a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. Now, the fact that Gronk is coming out of retirement is not a shock. There have been rumblings for quite some time that that might happen. The fact that he's going to be a Buccaneer, not exactly a shock. That's where his quarterback is. And why don't we be honest for a minute? Gronk in Tampa or a match made in heaven. Not Tampa in terms of the team or the offense. I'm talking about Tampa, the place. That's where Gronk was meant to play. He's not a cold weather guy. He's a Tampa guy. In other words, yo soy fiesta.
Yo soy fiesta. Yo soy fiesta.
Buck Nation is hyped, but nobody more so than Dick Vitale. He's fired up.
Hi, everybody. Dick Vitale. Tell me this is true. I can't believe this. I'm getting buzzed here. All of a sudden, I was relaxing. I'm getting all these buzzing sounds. Gronkowski to the Bucks. Oh, my God. I can't believe it. Brady to Gronkowski. They're shocking the world, the Tampa Bay Bucks. They are for real, man. Oh, I hope we can play football this year. I can't wait. My season tickets, man. Their words. I'm so excited. Are you kidding me? I'm jumping in. Whoa.
Jump in the pool on that, Dickie V.
Jump out the pool on that.
Jump in the pool on that, Dickie V. So the Bucks and Pats worked out a deal that's going to send Gronk and a seventh rounder to Tampa for a fourth round pick. And there's a lot to unpack in there. First off, let me get this part out of the way. I hope that Gronk is healthy. I hope that Gronk stays healthy. He's going to celebrate his 31st birthday in a few weeks. Yo soy fiesta.
Yo soy
but
fiesta.
But when he retired at 29, my man looked like he was about 59. He looked and sounded like a broken man at that point. That was the oldest 29-year-old I have ever seen. And with good reason. There was the back surgery that cost him a season in college. There was the torn ACL, the broken arm, the bad hammy. Two more back surgeries. The fact that they drained a liter of blood from his quad after the Super Bowl win over the Rams. He has not played a full 16 games since 2011. He missed an average of 4 games per year since then. So when I say that I hope he's healthy, I mean that. Multiple back surgeries are nothing to jack with. Yet he was still able to leave the game with his health actually intact. So for his sake, I hope he can maintain that. From a playing standpoint, when he was on the field last in 2018, he was not the dominant Gronk that we all remember, but he was still dangerous. Do you remember that go-ahead drive against the Rams? New England ran Haas wide juke 3 straight times. Each time it had a completely different yet successful result. Because the defense couldn't tell if Gronk was going to run a route or if he was going to flatten a defender. This is what Tampa is getting. This is what Brady is getting. Of course, TB43 and Buck Nation are pumped. Old man Tommy just got the ultimate security blanket with the oversized white gloves. Yesterday on this show, Carson Palmer laid out how he expects it's going to go with his old coach, Bruce Arians, and Brady. You know, Brady's going to bring in a bunch of his favorite plays, or Bruce will. Brady will bring in his favorite target and his favorite plays. And with Gronk, you have not just the best tight end ever, you also have the best blocking tight end ever. Even if this guy never catches a pass, he's still an asset. But of course, the Bucs are hoping for more than just that. So, can Brady and Gronk do what so many other people from colder climates have done? Move down to Florida when they get older and have a better life? Can they recreate what they had in New England in Cigar City? At this point, who knows? We just don't know. There are way too many variables. But if Bruce Arians and the Bucks have got both these guys in tow, they got to be fired up. Fired up to find out. That's the Bucks. I love what they did. They're that much more interesting. Now you've got the other side of that coin, the Patriots side. Now, on the one hand, they do get a fourth-round pick for a guy who is retired, and they had no leverage in that situation, and they still got a fourth-rounder for a soon-to-be 31-year-old guy who was not with them last season and was not going to be with them this season. and no Patriot fan. There was no way in hell Gronk was coming back to ball with Jarrett Stidham. More importantly, no way in hell Gronk was coming back to play for Bill Belichick. I mean, why don't we be real about that for a minute? More than the injuries themselves, that's probably the reason Gronk left in the first place. Because that old mumbler sucked the joy right out of the game, right from that big lug. Sucked the life right out of Gronk. Gronk didn't retire from the game as much as he retired from the hood. And the first chance he got to play for somebody else, he took it. That's no coinkydink. Same with Brady. They both could have returned to the Patriots. But instead, they choose to play for statistically the worst franchise in the history of sports. The hell does that tell you? It tells you they were sick of the hood. It tells you he literally ran both of them off. It tells you the means no longer justify the ends. Not when you're winning rings, they don't. It's one thing to treat people like that when you're winning rings. They might stand for it, but not when they're not. Like, these guys still want to play. They just don't want to play for the hood. And can you really blame them? But back to that draft pick for a minute. Lots of people are rushing in to crush Belichick, saying that he got worked on that deal. Personally, I don't see it that way. He wasn't going to have Gronk. Gronk says, reportedly, he was not going to play for anybody other than the Bucks. He would have stayed retired. So in that sense, Belichick got something for nothing. So he's got that going for him, which is somewhat nice, I guess. But you know what's better? Having Gronk. You know what's better than that? Having Brady and Gronk. And he could have, but they both decided they'd rather be in Tampa than Foxborough. And again, can you blame these guys? You tell me what sounds better. Another year of Belichick grumping it up in New England or hanging with Brady and Bruce, win or lose, we booze, Arians in Tampa. Gronk with a coach who says, win or lose, we booze. I mean, come on, are you kidding? It's a no-brainer. And brace yourself for this. But Tampa is a more desirable place to play than New England. It's just a fact. So, like, once is a fluke, twice is a trend, and I know you Pats honks will say it's unfair, and we're talking about a guy in his 40s and a guy in his 30s who's busted up, and that is true. But, man, that overall look is terrible, right? We're not talking about a couple of ham and eggers. We're talking about the greatest quarterback of all time, the greatest tight end of all time. They both still want to play, but they don't want to play in New England. They're both in Tampa. You had them both, and you could have brought them back. And now you have to wonder about the coach and the Pats culture and how big a part of that factors in. You have to wonder if maybe you don't have to be an a-hole all the time. Maybe it's not so awesome to be an a-hole 365 days a year. Maybe you let your guard down every now and then, and you let guys know that they're appreciated. The coach and the culture that ripped off rings also appears to have driven away their two biggest stars. But even the most diehard Pats fan has to admit that seeing Brady and Gronk in Bucks jersey instead of Pats gear is going to be really weird. Really weird. And you've got nobody to blame but yourself. Well, and the hood. Well, just the hood. So this is surprising and really not surprising at all. He is Dwayne Casey. Dwayne, there is a lot to cover, but first off, how are you and your family doing right about now?
We're doing fine, doing well. My kids have, we got a young dog, a new dog, so everybody's excited and happy, but everybody's healthy, Jim, through these crazy times.
I like that. Good to hear it, Dwayne. Good to have you back. So you're an NBA head coach, which obviously is an amazingly stressful and all-consuming job. So when you have some time like this, are you continuing to grind away at work and breaking tape and things like that, or are you trying to unplug a little bit?
Well, a little bit of both, Jim. And you know, it's been, this year was a tough year for us, and the fact we decided to go in a rebuilding direction. So that was stressful, but I'm kind of mixing my time between watching some of our game tapes, watching some prospects in the draft, and also spending some valuable family time that, you know, we kind of neglect at when you're in the grind of the season.
Now more than ever, we know that businesses are grappling with incredibly challenging times. A lot of things in life and business are changing right now, and we are all adapting to our new priorities. While it does take time to adjust, LinkedIn believes that we can create opportunity when our community comes together. Whether you're looking to hire now for a critical role or you're thinking about needs that you may have in the future, LinkedIn Jobs is here to help. LinkedIn is an active community with over 675 million members worldwide. LinkedIn screens candidates for the hard and soft skills that you're looking for and puts your job in front of candidates looking for job opportunities like yours. And with LinkedIn, you can hire the right person quickly when you need to. So when it's time to hire and find that right person, LinkedIn is here to help. If you need to hire for healthcare or essential services, you can also post your jobs for free. Just visit LinkedIn.com/Rome. Again, LinkedIn.com/ROME and post a job right now. Terms and conditions do apply. Dwayne Casey joining us. I'll talk to you about that rebuild in 1 second. But okay, if you were to go back to March 11th, it was the day the league suspended activities. That night, you were coaching against Philadelphia. The story goes that in the fourth quarter, your team's athletic trainer came to you in the middle of the action and he talked to you. What did he say and what was your reaction?
Well, Jim came up to me and said during the game, I think it was close to the end of the third quarter, and Sekou Dabiya had been friends with Gobert with Utah, and they'd spent some time after the game, with each other in Detroit. And this was like a week later, maybe the Wednesday, this Saturday night's when we played Utah, and we played Philadelphia on Wednesday night, I think it was. So he comes to me and says, hey, we got to get Sekou out of the game. Gobert just tested positive. And I said, whoa, you know. And so we took him out of the game. And, you know, we had no clue. And they had no clue about contacts, how you could catch it or anything. We were very, upset about that. So we got him out. And then, lo and behold, he comes to me and says, hey, you can put him back in because, you know, he's already been out there. If somebody had contacted him, he's going to give it away anyway. So we put him back in the game. He played the rest of the fourth quarter, and then he was tested the next day and, tested negative, which, was a tough thing to understand because we had no clue the protocol, how to handle a situation like that. And, since then, we've all been educated. And the one player that did come down with it was Christian Wood, who was just public, so I'm not saying anything out of school. So, but Christian's doing great now. He's back working out, totally healthy. But it was a scare because we had no clue what was going on, how to handle it, with that type of thing. So it was a scary night that night.
Pistons head coach Dwayne Casey's joining us, no doubt. I would imagine that was really scary. And then you were at home, and you kept yourself sequestered from your wife and your kids. So right. What you did is you lived in your basement for the next 2 weeks. Like, what was that time like for you, and what did you do?
Well, the thing, just because Kristen had tested positive and also the possibility of being exposed to Gobert since we played him, everybody, the doctor advised us to go into quarantine. It was tough. My family was upstairs. I was downstairs. My wife would come in and knock on the door in the downstairs bedroom and put food at the door. I would get it and put my dish out. So I've never been to jail, Jim. So I can imagine what that felt like. But, it was kind of a lonely feeling. You were down there by yourself. And, I stayed away from my family. And that was probably the most difficult time doing this, is being sequestered against away from them, fearing the fact that I definitely didn't want to expose my family to the virus if I had it. But tough situation, tough times. But once we got out, we've had some quality family time.
We're talking to Dwayne Casey, and as you point out, Wood has been declared healthy, and now everybody is waiting for word on the future of the season itself. So most players in the league, of course, do not have access to courts and facilities at that moment. So how are you and your staff helping your guys stay in shape and stay right mentally?
Well, we stand in contact with different ways, Zoom, by text, by phone calls. Our athletic trainers got a lot of our players' equipment to get, take to their condos, to their houses, and give every player a different program. to work out with. And, you know, we check in. Each coach has two or three guys. I go through the entire roster, you know, once a week or so, or a couple of days a week to touch base with the guys, either text or by phone call. So that way we do stay in touch and stay up on what they're doing. They have to report back to the trainer their weight, sending videos of the workouts back to us. And so staying in touch as best as we can doing this, and it's difficult. But so far, all the guys are working out on their own, sticking to the program, and waiting to see what the league tells us.
Dwayne Casey, my guest, you know, this in and of itself is challenging, but then when you think about what's gone down with the team, you lost Blake Griffin to season-ending surgery. Andre Drummond was traded. Reggie Jackson was bought out. Listen, Dwayne, you're an extremely tough-minded person, but when you have that kind of change in such a short period of time, was there ever a feeling of, man, this is not what I signed up for?
Well, a little bit. You know, you think about that at first, but then we have a great owner in Tom Gores who's always fought and been against, you know, rebuilding and reshuffling the deck. So it was tough for him, but once he and I talked and Ed Stefanski and Arn Tellem, we all sit down and had a conversation about, you know, let's restructure, rebuild the team. I understood it, but it's difficult. You know, you go in preparing the team to compete and to play, but you know that whether it's youth or inexperience or whatever it is, get you beat toward the end of the game. But some silver linings come out of it. We did, you know, give Christian Wood, his development has surged. Fee, Mahalu has come on and developed. So we've got some silver linings out of that by playing the young players, giving them a chance to develop through this phase of our rebuild situation.
You know, when you talk about rebuilding it too, Dwayne, I wonder, when you took over in Toronto, the team was coming off a 22-win season. So
right,
you know
right.
what it takes to build a team pretty much up from the ground.
Right.
What is the wisdom you could take from those years in Toronto that you can now apply in Detroit?
Just what you mentioned, Jim, your patience. You know, when you go coming from Dallas, we had just won the championship in Dallas, and going to Toronto, which was rebuilding. We had a young DeMar DeRozan was in, and you know, Jose Calderon was still there, but Andre Bargnani. So we were still young and building the team that way. But it taught me patience, Jim. Understanding guys are going to make mistakes. You know, you want to win, you want to compete, you prepare the team to win, because you don't want to. You definitely want to build that foundation as far as teaching your players how to win. But you have a heavy dose of patience and humility when you go through that, because, you know, guys are going to make mistakes. You live with them. You can't kick them to the curb when they do that. But you see you take the silver linings out of every situation is what I learned through that. And by going through that, I see now here in Detroit, we're in the same situation we were in Toronto. Young, inexperienced, trying to develop a young player as we were. DeMar DeRozan, and there is a light at the end of the tunnel, because if I hadn't been through that, I would have, you know, probably been far more depressed and down on everyone. But I do see, and we are taking the same recipe that we had in Toronto.
Dwayne Casey, my guest. One final thought for you. Detroit, to me, is a great, great sports town. It's an extremely proud city, but a city that has not had a lot of success to cheer in sports of late. So what would it mean to get this team back up to the level where it's competing for championships the way it was roughly 12 years ago?
No question, Jim. And again, the fans here were calling for, they were, you know, and all the – I didn't listen to them, but they were telling me on the call-in shows, they were talking about rebuilding, retooling, and I kept saying it's painful. I've been through it in Toronto. I know how painful it is, and you got to have patience. It's not a magic wand that you wave over the team, and then voila, they become great players. It takes time. It takes frustration. It takes failure to go through it. But they are great fans. And one thing I've said about Detroit, they know what good basketball looks like. They've had Hall of Fame coaches, Larry Brown, Chuck Daly, Rick Carlisle, all here, you know, going through this through the city. So they know what good basketball looks like, the three championships they won. So they understand, which makes it a little bit better, because when you're putting the team together, they know what real basketball looks like. And that's a big, big, it's a plus and a curse, because their expectations. But The fans here have been great because they understand, they know, and they know what they want. So it's a challenge, but our coaching staff is enjoying it, enjoy the teaching, the working, the development. You know, that's why I'm watching a lot of this draft, just to see what we have and what we need and try to grow. And the good thing about it, Jim, we don't have to go down to the nub, to the studs, to rebuild, because we do have Blake Griffin coming back. We do have great energy and experience with Derrick Rose here. Luke Kennard has grown with years on his belt. So we're not at rock bottom. So we're kind of a middle build, more or less, than anything else.
Head coach of the Detroit Pistons, Dwayne Casey, my guest, second year with the Pistons. He was an NBA Coach of the Year in 2018, an NCAA champion, also an NBA champion as an assistant. Good friend of the program. Dwayne, it is great to have you back. Great to hear your voice. Stay safe, and let's get this thing turned around so we can do it again soon.
Thank you so much, Jim. And give my best to Scotty Brooks. Tell him I said hello.
We're 24 hours out of the draft, and I've got some good news, and I've got some bad news. And it's about two teams that you can pretty much associate with good news. It's actually not bad news. It's weird news. Good news and weird news. Let me start with the weird. Like every other GM, Detroit Lions GM, Bob Quinn, will be conducting the draft from his home. And like every other general manager, Bob Quinn is prepared in case there are some technical issues. Everybody in the league right now is freaking out about what happens if technically the system crashes, their system. Bob Quinn's no different. So he announced that he's going to have an IT specialist on standby. Actually, let's be more specific than him just having an IT specialist on standby.
You know, we're going to have an IT specialist here with me. So he actually decided to rent a mini Winnebago to sit in my driveway. You know, I'm not sure how my neighborhood association is going to like that, but that's life.
All right. So on the one hand, we had Dwayne Casey on just now, and you heard me. I said Detroit is a great sports town. Detroit is a very proud city. If you're looking for me to be one of those national hosts or a guy with a platform that's going to smash Detroit, you're barking up the wrong tree. I love Detroit. Now that I got that out of the way, the Lions IT specialist is going to be in an RV outside of Quinn's home for three straight days. Again, I love the city of Detroit. It is a great sports town. It's an amazing city in and of itself. The fan base is incredible. They get dumped on way too much. But I've got to say right now, Detroit, the hell are you doing? An RV? A mobile home. And that's not directed at the city of Detroit. That's not directed at the people of Detroit. It's directed at whoever came up with the idea of having their draft strategy involve a guy in a mobile home in a driveway. I mean, come on, man. At least go with a Sprinter van or something modern like that. A Winnebago just sounds like some busted up, rusted out piece of bleep from the 70s and Cousin Eddie out there trying to empty the crapper. I know it's an interesting time. I know it's a challenging time. But if your draft strategy includes the words Winnebago or mobile home, you're asking to be clowned. And only one franchise would do that. Only one, the Lions. Like, you don't hear the Seahawks talking about incorporating a mobile home or a camper into their plans for the draft. And if an RV really is the only thing you can do, if that's your only good solution, if you have no other way around it, man, keep that to yourself. I would not make that public. I hate that story. I hate that story because it's practically begging Gino in San Antonio to jump on his phone and then do something like this.
I know you're hoping that somebody's going to rise up from the ashes of your once literate city to defend you, but I got bad news. Mitch Albom, he ain't walking through that door. Once he realized that the five people he was going to meet in heaven were all wearing Red Wings jerseys, he moved to L.A. And I can't blame him, because if things get any worse in your city, the president's probably going to send in Snake Plissken to rescue Calvin Johnson. Face it, the only large society of people with the same values as you are prisoners.
Gino. Man, I love that city. I love that city, and I hate that story. So let me move on from the weird news to the good news. The good news is the Los Angeles Chargers new unis. Have you seen them? Damn, they're incredible. And they dropped them in one of the cockiest uniform reveals ever.
Well, you haven't seen anything yet.
Since 1960, we've been rolling out some of the best uniforms in the game. Like this one. And this one. And who could forget this one? Think we can't top those? Think again. Because this is about doing something bold. Fearless. Taking something you love and bringing it back loud. But how do you improve on perfection? First, you start with the design process.
Taking inspiration from the subtle curvature of the bolt, we analyze the ratio of underpinning our logo and never the crappy.
Nah, who cares? All you need to know is we took the best and made it better.
Did you catch that moment early on when the narrator was talking about, quote, taking inspiration from the subtle curvature of the bolt? We analyzed the ratios underpinning the logo in an effort to craft, and then just stopped. That's a shot at all the other teams that have come out with new gear this year and try to justify it with designer speak. The Chargers do not have to do this. No, their approach was more like this. Nah, who cares? All you need to know is that we took the best and we made it even better.
Nah, who cares? All you need to know is we took the best and made it better.
I love it. I love it. It's not bragging if you can back it up. And the Chargers backed it up. Look, I don't always talk about uniforms because it's a matter of taste. And in taste, you can't really have an argument. But if you don't love these new uniforms, we're going to have an argument. Like, the Winnebago is a terrible idea. The Chargers' new kits are an awesome idea. Powder blue power. Let's go ahead and start right at the very top. They're going with white helmets with a lightning bolt and an old school number. Then you've got a simplified bolt on the shoulders and on the pants and six different combinations. There's a powder blue jersey with white pants combo. There's powder blue with gold pants, white with gold, and a couple of blue on blue combos. But have you seen the all white unis? White helmet, white jersey, white pants, ice cold. Just seeing that look makes me forget that some NFL team has an RV parked in their GM's driveway. If the mantra, look good, feel good, play good, is true, you better just give them the Lombardi right now. Give them all Lombardis right now. Man, that was handled beautifully. They handled that all right. And the Lions got it all weird. And weird is normally good, but not in this case. Capital One knows life does not alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that catches things that might look wrong with your credit card, like over-tipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud. It then sends an alert to your phone and helps you fix it. Also, use Eno to get virtual card numbers to better protect yourself when you shop online. It's another way that Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details. He is a friend of the program. He is Charles Davis. Charles, before we get to the draft, let me first ask, how are you and everybody around you doing right now?
We are doing well, Jim. Thank you very much for asking. I trust the same for you and your family. I trust the same for everyone who can hear our voices and watching you on television. And for those who are going through it and have had to battle, obviously hoping they're coming out the other side just fine. And how about our first responders, doctors, nurses, people on the front lines? I mean, it's not overstating it. They give their lives every day. They put their lives on the line every single day to try and help us. Those people are phenomenal.
Literally. And I could not have said that any better than you just did. Charles Davis is my guest. So what about the draft preparation and the process for you since it's such a different year? How radically different has everything been for you, and how have you approached your draft analysis?
You know, Jim, I don't know that it's been different in the preparation at all. I think the difference is just going to be in not the outcome, because teams are going to make choices and we're going to analyze them, right? But I think going into it in terms of, did I get the information I normally have gotten before that I feel comfortable with going, or am I going with a few more of that instinct based on what I've seen before, because I just don't think that most of us have been able to call our normal contacts in the middle of all this and say, hey, let's go over these best defensive tackles. Hey, Charles, I would love to, but I've got two in online school. You know?
Right.
I'm not saying that's 100%. We're still getting our info, but I think getting our time with people hasn't been the same. And because of all that, they haven't had the time to give to us because of everything they've got going on, plus doing their regular jobs.
Charles Davis joining us. The draft does get underway tomorrow night. All right, so why don't we talk about the very top of that? You've got the Bengals picking first. You have Joe Burrow going to them with the first pick. What kind of an impact do you think that he might have on that team as a rookie?
I think let's just take it away from the playing. I expect him to be a good player. They're going to have to continue to build around him and give him some talent to work with. I think they've got to get some more people on the perimeter. We can go all day on all that. But more so to start the, you know, to restart that franchise, face of the franchise, we say it ad nauseum. In this case, the central casting, isn't it?
Right.
The Heisman Trophy winner from Southern Ohio who gave one of the greatest Heisman speeches ever about his people back there. And then sometimes, even with all the accolades he's had, Jim, I feel like there's times where he's still underrated. Go back to his high school days. Apparently, his high school wasn't very good in football until he came along, he and his crew, he and his unit. Now they're winning state they won state championships while he was there. Goes to Ohio State, loses a pitch battle with Dwayne Haskins. You can't say Ohio State made a mistake because Haskins threw 50 touchdown passes and was player of the year in the Big Ten and the number 15 pick. But somehow perseveres, gets to LSU. 2 years later, he wins a Heisman and has a season that is arguably the greatest season a college quarterback has ever had. I know people are going to say, recency, Davis, recency. Look at the numbers. He has to be in that discussion. There's no getting around it. That's what they have. But, they have to go with this kid for all those reasons. Plus, I think he's a very good player.
Charles Davis joining us. I don't even think that's a matter of recency. I think that's the best year I've ever seen a college quarterback have. I agree with you. Now, if he goes first, then you've got Chase Young going second. You make the point that he might actually be the best player in the draft. What have you seen from him that makes you think so?
An ability to not just rush the passer with his gifts, but rush the passer with his mind. I see a kid who's working on different things. I see a kid whose first move is stymied, and he finds a second move, you know, to continue to try and get pressure on that quarterback. I've got a couple of plays that I pulled watching tape, and I was showing a couple of people before all this hit. Hey, take a look at this. Ball goes away. He rushes the passer, Jim. Ball goes to the opposite side of the field. He reverses or retraces or whatever you want to call it, and somehow gets involved with the play 10 yards downfield, 15 yards downfield. That's what I love to see with these young kids, because if they're going to play with that kind of abandon and bring that with them to the NFL, that's a big deal. Because, by the way, a whole lot of their first moves are going to be stymied by those offensive linemen in the NFL. You have an arsenal full that you can go to a second and a third move and stay relentless about it.
Charles Davis joining us. Let me drop down to number five, because Miami's pick there might be the most talked about pick in the draft, and whether or not they go with Tua or Justin Herbert. When you look at Tua, I mean, from a pure quarterback standpoint, there's a lot to like, but it's hard to look at that in a vacuum because of his history of injuries. So if you're in a front office and you're dealing in a situation where guys have not been able to come to the facilities, how worried would you be about Tua's health?
Very. You'd have to be, right? Because there's no getting around it, Jim. It's not just the most recent one. It was the ankle before that. Then it was the ankle before that. It was the hand. It was this. I mean, it's all those different things. I made the point yesterday. It was on a show I was on where it's not apples to apples. But you remember Taysom Hill in college, Jim?
Sure.
Remember how exciting he was?
Yep.
He essentially, the interesting part is Manny Diaz, now the head coach of Miami, right? He was a D coordinator at Texas, and Taysom Hill put a number on him so badly that he lost his job on Sunday. Okay, I mean, during the season, because of Taysom Hill and BYU, they might still be running. I think it's like nearly 600 yards. This kid, you know, Taysom Hill, every year had a catastrophic injury, right? You remember? Shoulder, knee, all these things that finished his years. He gets to the NFL. He's playing every contact play that you can make, returning kicks, covering kicks as a gunner, playing tight end, you know, personal protector on the punt team. Hadn't had an injury yet. My point is, we don't know the future. Maybe he's gotten out of them. I'm not trying to be a soothsayer. I'm not trying to be a guy that throws a coin in the air. All I'm saying is, what are your doctors telling you? From what I'm hearing, they're saying these are not chronic injuries. They don't think that they should set him back. Are you concerned? The answer is yes. Here's where my biggest concern would be as a guy having to make that pick. If I pass on Tua, and I believe he has those gifts that most of us believe he has, and I pass on him, and he stays healthy, how am I going to look in 7 to 10 years versus taking the safe route? And will that safe route still equal what I think I can get out of Tua? That's a big question for a GM to have to answer without full medical in front of him.
So Charles Davis joining us. So what do you think they'll do? For instance, we've seen quarterbacks, really good quarterbacks, drop in the draft in the past. Can you see a scenario where Tua starts to drop, or is there no way, in your opinion, he gets past Miami and L.A.?
I think there's a scenario, and Jim, if Miami decides the medical is not what they want, whether they trade up with Detroit at 3 or whatever, right? Let's just say Miami has the option, and they decide to go, let's say, Justin Herbert, because I don't think they're going to swing on their first pick and not swing at a quarterback. It's got to be one of them, right? So they decide to go Justin Herbert. Let's say the Chargers at that point have decided, Tyrod Taylor, we're comfortable, we're going to keep moving, get an offensive tackle. Now you're at 7. Carolina just got Teddy Bridgewater. You're at 8. Kyler Murray's in Arizona. You're at 9 is where I think if you have a design of wanting to get up there and get Tua, you better take a hard look at getting to 9. And the reason I say that is Gardner Minshew is the quarterback of record in Jacksonville right now. He's a great story. We all have fun with him. It's really a tremendous deal, a 6th-round pick that most people thought would not be that guy. And heck, he was going to Alabama to become a coach before reversing and going to Washington State. Now he's still a player. Is that really as much as you're going to take into the season if you're Jacksonville? And if all of a sudden Tua Tagovailoa drops in your lap, you're going to turn that down? If you want him, I think 9 is where you got to come up and get. A lot of people are talking about you got to get in front of, you know, I don't know, Cleveland. I think it's really 9 with Jacksonville that I would have that discussion.
Charles Davis joining us for a few more moments. I think that makes a lot of sense. Now, what about Charles Gronk? Your thoughts on that before I let you go. Do you think, I mean, not that surprising, but he is now with Tampa. Do you think it's just a matter of plug and play and Brady and Gronk picking up right where they left off when things were great? Or is it going to take some time with the new team and with Gronk coming out of retirement and missing a year? How do you think that plays out?
Oh, that's a good one. But look, bottom line is, in first blush, Jim, there was no chance that you were really stunned, right?
Nah.
Okay. No. Timing was really about all there is to it for us, right? It's just never really been the timing. Okay, it happens right before the draft. This is a great story. There's no way you were surprised. So none of us were. I think that Gronk has had that in his head that if the right situation hits, I'm going to get myself ready to go and I'm going to ride with my guy again. Will it be plug and play? Not 100%. But Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich are really smart football guys and the best coaches I've ever known. They adapt to the talent that they have. They don't just try and force the issue. They will work together, and this thing will come together to fit Tom Brady, to fit Bruce Arians, to fit Rob Gronkowski. I'm bullish on it. He's going to have his body back, his mind right. I think that Jason Witten's comeback last year was tremendous, and he did a really nice job. But he was much older than Rob Gronkowski. Gronk is younger. I think he'll come back, he'll bounce back, and we'll see that pep in his step again. And I think it's a great thing. And by the way, he gets to go in and tell that locker room everything they need to know about Tom Brady, because you and I both know, Jim, that some of those guys in that locker room will be a little hesitant about approaching the GOAT. And Gronk will be able to tell them, hey, I speak TB12. This is how it goes down. This is what you should look for. Be ready to rock and roll. I get to win all the way around for Tampa.
All right, so the smack-off is coming. Smack-off 26. A quarter century of smack, and then some. Every year I say it, and every single year it still hits me. I mean it every single year when I say it, and every year it hits me hard. If you had told me 26 years ago that the smack-off would still be an annual event, a tradition, and that it would be televised, I never would have believed that. If you had told me that 26 years ago. If you had said to me the first time I did that, that it would still be going strong. A quarter of a century later and on TV, I would have never believed it, but here we are.
Here we are.
It's time to announce the date. In honor of the most legendary of clones, Randall from the OC, I will ask that you wait for it. Wait for it. A little bit longer now. And the date is... Hold up, Alvin. Can you pick me up, brother? The date is... The date of SmackOff 26. The quarantine edition is... Friday, June 19th. Friday, June 19th. SmackOff 26, June 19th.
The SmackOff.
June 19th.
The SmackOff.
The SmackOff.
We'll do it live.
The best of the best. Best invite only. Mark that down once again, June 19th.
You.
You got any other party favors, Alvin? Now that you know that date, June 19th, here are a few other things that you either need to learn or be reminded of. As I've said in the past, there is a time frame. There is a rhythm to all of this. There are certain road signs or mile markers along the road to the SmackOff itself. As an example, you've got the announcement. You have the announcement of the prize. You have the release of the official SmackOff promo, which, as always, is an Alvin DeLauro production. That'll probably come mid-May. There will be a time to RSVP. I'm not looking for that just yet. I'll let you know when it's time to start RSVPing. And as always, here are the rules when it comes to that. Just because you're in the SmackOff does not mean that you'll get on during the SmackOff. We'll talk about that as we get closer. But you should know that from the very start. Just getting in does not mean you'll get on. Then you've got SmackOff Week, which is the 4 days leading up to the event itself. It's the time when some participants might choose to make a pre-fight weigh-in call. Vic, as an example, is famous for that. Then you've got the event, the tradition, the SmackOff. And as has been custom for a while now, there is a lot of time between now and the SmackOff. This is not a rush. This thing is going to build, and it's going to build, and it's going to build until June 19th. Again, there's a rhythm to this type of thing. I'm not looking to blow it all out right now and get everybody too hyped up too far in advance. Now, I've got some pre-SmackOff advice. People are always asking me, what makes a winning call? The answer is, I can't tell you. And this is the truth. People never believe this. It is the truth. I cannot tell you. There's not a checklist of things to do. There's not a checklist of items to hit or components to the call that make it a great call. There aren't a series of boxes that you need to check in order to win. What was true in the very first SmackOff is going to be true right now for SmackOff 26. You know the winner when you hear it. I mean, it really is that simple. Pretty non-scientific. You know it when you hear it. But I am willing to give you some free advice. And given that it's coming from the host of the event, my advice is you take note. You accept this advice. I'm not big on attaching rules to the SmackOff. But the first rule that I determine the winner and that determination is final is a rule that's never, ever going to change. It's my call. I decide who wins. That determination is final, period. Very few rules, but that's rule number one, and that does not change. Here's another rule. Make sure I want to take your call that day. Make me want to take your call that day. I want to say it again. I say it every year, and every year, a bunch of you do not hear this. Make sure that I want that call. Again, just because you're in the SmackOff, either by way of winning before or getting a golden ticket, does not mean that you're going to get on the air that day. There's a sense of entitlement for some of you. Like, I have the ticket. Put me on, Rome. I've won the event. Put me on. People want to hear me. People may or may not want to hear you. People may want to hear you. I don't care. Do I want to hear you? Make sure that I want to take that call. There have been some enormous names, previous winners even, that have not made it onto air the day of the event. This is how tough this thing is. This is how deep this competition is now. So if you think you can just roll up in here and call whenever you want on the day and be guaranteed entry, that's not happening. I need to want to take the call. Something else that means, between now and the day, don't blow it. Beware the overkill. Yes, golden ticket holders have to defend it between now and then. But be tactical about it. Be smart about it. You want to justify the golden ticket, but you do not want to get it ripped. And yes, there is a fine line there. But it's up to you to figure out where that line is and navigate it. If I see you calling every single day or every other day or every single week between now and the smack off, that's not tactical. Do that, and there's a very good chance that you will not get on the air that day. So be different, do better, and make sure that when that day comes, that I do want to take your call. Make sure that that particular show needs your call. You figure that out. That's your job. Like, let me put it to you another way. I already have more great callers than I have slots. I have more great callers than I need for the smack off. I don't need to give you more than 8 weeks worth of notice. I could do this thing tomorrow if I wanted to. That's how deep the field is right now. I could have the smack off on June 19th and not mention it until June 18th, and we would still have an awesome smack off. This tells you the talent and the significance of the event and the depth. So no, I don't need to promote it. I don't need to release a promo. I mean, as always, that's just a gift from Alvin. Here's another gift from me to you. A couple of things I would strongly recommend that you not do in the buildup or on the day of. If I hear any of you declaring, quote, I'm here to take down the legends, you most definitely are not taking anybody down. I'm here to take down the legends is the Jerome Bettis is from Detroit of the smack off. It's not cool, it's not fresh, it's not edgy, it's not original, and it's certainly not making me want to take your call. I don't want that call. I don't want that call, and I'm not taking that call. I don't want that call, and nobody wants to hear that call. You want to get embarrassed on the biggest stage ever? Start your call by saying, I'm here to take down the legends. Got another piece of advice for you. I rarely give out advice about content, but I will this time. As everybody on the planet knows, we're in the middle of a global pandemic. This may well prove to be the quarantine smack-off. If your plan is to make a call dedicated to COVID-19 or coronavirus, just know you're playing with fire. Because just about every joke that can be made about the virus has already been made and will be made between now and the smack-off itself. As an example, we all know that one of the competitors is from a town in California that shares a name with the virus. You are not the first person to think of that. I'm not saying that virus jokes are going to get you run, but you know I've got the hammer. You know I'm not afraid to use it, especially on that day. So if you're going to come in here with coronavirus smack, it better be the best Rona smack ever, or it's going to go badly for you. Speaking of topics that are tired, sex.
Sex with me.
Zingers about your junk or somebody else's junk are tired and they're played out. And yet a bunch of you still think that's the clearest path to success. The clearest shot to the title. Let me be clear, it is not. I remember last year during the event, it was like, junk take, junk take. Crack about this guy's junk, my junk, your junk. We're all looking at each other like, man, is this all they're going to talk about today? Like, it's just not that funny. It's not that original. I'm not saying that every call has got to be G-rated. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that if you think that making a bunch of jokes about how much sex you get and how little sex everybody else gets, and you think that's the funniest thing ever, it's not. So, for a brief recap of what you're up against, So you know that you need something way better than I'm here to take down the legends and I have legendary junk and you don't. So you know what you're up against. Here's a quick rundown of the top five from Smackoff 25. Here is Mike in Indy.
Romy, I'm the big, long, straight piece in Tetris. Stevie Carbone is that crappy zigzag piece you get right before your screen fills up. Rome, I have thousands of Twitter followers, but I only follow five, so getting a follow from me is a huge honor. If I win today, I'm going to open up the floodgates and follow the whole XR4TI. That might be the closest you knuckleheads ever get to a Twitter verification. Now let me translate all that into Hawk's natural dialect. Caw! Rome, about once a year, somebody new shows up and flashes brilliance, and everyone assumes it's me because I'm the gold standard of brilliance. On the brilliance scale of 1 to Mike and Indy, Jeff in Southfield started as a 9, but after that garbage call today, you all know that ain't me. Regardless, Jeff received the ultimate compliment any Smackoff caller could ever receive. At one point, everyone thought he was me.
This is how good and how deep this field is. That was fifth best. One of the best to ever do it reemerged last year, the Cabin Asian.
It's been a long couple weeks, Jim. I'm a huge Big Poppy fan, I got to tell you, because David Ortiz, he's literally the one jersey that I own. So it's been a rough couple weeks. The shooting totally messed me up, and I come to find out it was a case of mistaken identity. So naturally, the first thought that I have is what beef could Esther Roll have possibly had with the Dominican drug cartel? By the way, you losers complaining about the final seasons of Game of Thrones, the ones who are like, and the timeline wasn't realistic for Dany to ride Drogon from Dragonstone to the north. She's riding a freaking dragon. And the least realistic thing to you losers is the timeline? Okay.
Esther Roll and a drug cartel was great. And a reminder of just how good the Cabin Asian is. One of the best ever. But Caleb was the one who jumped up on the podium.
Can you imagine what would happen if one of these cadavers from the days of yore won the Smackoff, like Carbone or the Cabin Asian? They'd go longer in between titles than Rick and Buffalo when he can't afford a used car. Now, I'm not saying that high school teachers don't get paid very well, but I am saying that to save money on laundry, Rick just showers with his clothes on. He slams one Tide Pod over his melon, another one under his armpits, and a third in his mouth for a light snack. And yes, clones, I'm well aware that Tide Pod jokes are about a year and a half too old, even for Rick, but I'm pretty sure you could say the same thing about the senior girls in his geography class. And Richard, I don't even know why you're here today. You don't need the $5,000. If you or a loved one has been diagnosed with mesothelioma, you may be entitled to significant financial compensation.
Mesothelioma smack. And yet that was only good for third. So, what was good enough for second? The aforementioned Richard. Rick and Buffalo got second.
And don't even get me started on all those NBA front runners. Three Raptors fans in May turned into 3 million diehards in June. My skank mother-in-law even went up for the parade. This drunk bitch is going on 70 and still wants to party like it's Woodstock 69.
I miss that guy. Rick! That was good. That was really good. But still not good enough because here is a clip from the winner.
Speaking of other guys who look like they're about to have a heart attack, Rick in Buffalo did a great job screaming through his call today. He's a funny guy, Jim, calling his mother-in-law a skank, talking about his two-year-old's private parts. That's hysterical. I mean, I know this is radio. I just wish the guy weren't so gosh damned ugly, Jim. Rick in Buffalo is so ugly when he and his wife have sex, she has to close her eyes and pretend he's Tony Kornheiser. And much like PTI, that only gets her about 3 good minutes out of Rick.
There you go. This is some of what you're up against. Smackoff 26, June 19th. You got your date. You've got your free advice. Now all you need is an invite. And the rest of you just need to clear your calendar. Let's do this. Smackoff 26.
The Smackoff.
June 19th. Are you in? Not without an invite, you're not. If you've won the event, you got a lifetime exemption. Even if you have not won the event, you may already be in the field. If you're not in the field, you can still play your way into the field, but you need a golden ticket. And we've given out a half a dozen of those already. It is officially Smack Off season. A very good friend of the program, he is Scott Brooks. Scott, first off, how are you doing and how is everybody else around you doing during this time?
Jim, how you doing, man? All good here. Family's good. Everybody's together, healthy, enjoying our time as best we can. I think my wife is getting a little tired of me at the moment, but we're hanging in there. You know, just want to hopefully we can all get this over with and move on and get on with everybody's day and, you know, get back to playing some basketball.
I appreciate your thoughts there, Scott. Let me ask you this really quickly before we talk basketball. I'm kind of curious, how are you spending your time right now and what's a normal day like for you?
You know, trying to get a workout in, text messaging players, Zoom meetings. We're having some Zoom workouts with the ball handling. We're having some Zoom meetings with coaches. Took me a couple of weeks to figure all that out on the Zoom and have my volume, have the mute off and all that, but it was all good after a while. But trying to stay busy, you know, it's this time of the year, you're always, you know, you're moving around and playing games and preparing for the next game or preparing for the draft. Just connected with my general manager, Tommy Shepard, and trying to be up to date on, you know, the draft, but we don't know what's going to happen on that, where we will pick. But so it's just staying busy.
We're talking to Scott Brooks. You know, I wonder for you especially, and a lot of people like you, but when you're such a grinder and you're such a worker, you've been around the game for so long, what's it like when there is no game to be around, when there is no practice to prepare for, there's not even a practice facility where you can get up a few shots? There's nothing like that. So what's that like?
This obviously has never happened before in my lifetime. I never thought it would happen where the whole world would shut down over the coronavirus. But only thing that I'm worried about right now is the players' healthy, safety, and their families and everybody around. You know, it's important for us to continue to do what we're doing, but it's definitely difficult. It's not something that I like. It's not something I'm used to. But, you know, there's a lot of other people worse off, so I just have to, you know, continue to do my job and focus on what I need to do. But our players have been great. They've been locked in on all of our Zoom meetings and our meetings that we've had and our workouts that we have with our strength and conditioning coach. So with that going on, we're just trying to, you know, adjust to the new normal and figure things out on the fly.
We're talking to Scott Brooks. You know, speaking of the staff, earlier this month, Christy Tolliver, who was on your staff and somebody I know you think very highly of, she said this, Scott, about you, quote, "He's taken me under his wing. He's given me a great opportunity. I'm just a sponge absorbing everything I can from him. He's been a player in the NBA. He has that experience. And then obviously he's had a great career as a coach. He's the guy that I'm going to continue to learn from, listen to, bounce ideas off of. He's been a great influence for me as a coach, but also a really, really special friend," end quote. It's a long quote, but it's a great quote. What's mean to have her on your staff, and then what's it mean to hear that kind of praise from her?
Yeah, well, I have big respect for KT. She's a star. She's going to be a head coach in any league that she wants to be a head coach in. I'm happy to be with her and help her along the way, but quite honestly, she brings a different perspective that I've never had. She just sees the game. She's been a champion in the college level, champion in the pro level. She's a point guard. She knows how to play. She's tough. She has a great disposition. She loves the players. She loves to get sweat equity with the players. But I gained a lot of knowledge from her. She's a great basketball mind. And, you know, it's honored. I mean, I'm honored that she says all those nice things. But trust me, if she didn't bring value, I don't know if she would have been on our staff. But it's what she brings is our players love and our players need. And the same thing with our staff. But we're excited to have her. I'm thrilled to have her on my staff.
Wizards head coach Scott Brooks, my guest. One of the things you've talked about also is using this time to teach your players and everybody around you to boost everybody's basketball IQ. How do you go about doing that?
Well, what we did was we broke it down into four groups with about 3 to 5 players in groups and then with about 3 coaches. And then we went because we have like 12 guys on our current roster right now that never played with John Wall and Bradley Beal together. John has missed 40 games a couple of years ago, 50 games last season, and probably the whole all season this year. So they never played with those two. Those two guys are dynamic. When they're healthy, they're a problem because they can defend, they can score, they can playmate. So what we did was the last time John was really healthy, we played Atlanta in the first round. So what we did was we broke the groups down with coaches, and we had each group analyze the game, talk about the game after the game was over. We sent the game to them, talked about the game, make adjustments, what you would do for game two or game three. Whatever. Right now we're on game three. So it's been great. Our players are, man, they love it. I think they're just they're like they need basketball right now. So this is their only form that they're getting. So we really think that we can really improve their basketball IQ by just teaching the game, looking at the game from a coaching's perspective.
Scott Brooks joining us. You know, on top of that, you were talking about watching Game 7 of the 2010 Finals and seeing something that Kobe did that you wanted to apply to your team. What was it that you took away from that game?
Well, you know, obviously, rest in peace. Big respect for his career, his family. The thing that I love about that game, he didn't have a good shooting game, but he ended up defending like a madman. He ended up getting, I don't know, 15, 18 rebounds. But the biggest thing I took away, he made three things. He made a Derek Fisher made a huge three. I mean, he and Kobe was so excited. Ron Artest made a huge three. Kobe cheered him like he was making the shot. And also, Sasha made the two big free throws, like with, I don't know, I think 12 or 13 seconds. And he was so excited. That's what you want your stars to be. Be excited, celebrate your teammates' success. And that I took away from that. I would love to have our team, you know, really embrace them. I think we've done a pretty good job. Our bench is really bad. Sometimes the NBA calls us and say, hey, you guys are cheering too much. You guys, the fans are complaining. You got to control your bench. I'm like, are you kidding me? This is what the game is about, cheering your teammates on.
What a joke that is. That's incredible. Scott Brooks joining us. And then with The Last Dance airing right now, there's been a lot of talk about Michael Jordan and those 90s Bulls teams. You've talked in the past about what you still remember, Scott, the first time you guarded Jordan. For those who do not know, what do you remember about that moment and that challenge?
Well, I'll tell you what. He's definitely my second favorite player of all time. Olajuwon is my first because he gave me a championship. Jordan was my second because he retired and gave me a championship. So I look at it.
Great.
He's impossible. I mean, I've seen some of the best defenders guard him. When he missed the shot is because he missed the shot. It wasn't much to defense. I just remember guarding him. It was like two players I remember guarding, Magic and Jordan. All I kept saying is, somebody, please help me. Coming down, take this guy off my hands and help. But, you know, That's the fun part about competing and watching that. I mean, that was the best 2 hours of basketball in a long time. I can't wait for this Sunday.
You know, I wonder also, you were also at an off-season All-Star game in Fresno that Rod Higgins had organized, and Jordan was there for that. What do you remember about that and about Jordan's routine and his approach to everything?
I just remember, man, this is an All-Star game in the middle of summer in the Central Valley, California, Fresno, Celan Arena. And this guy is preparing for the game like he's about to kill somebody. It's like he was going out there, and whoever was in his face, he was going to dominate the game. And I just remember that. It was in the locker room, and he was busting some chops. That's why I do notice that during the first show this past Sunday. But he was like that in the locker room there, just grinding at you and just busting your chops every time he can give the opportunity. But the competitive spirit that he had in the summer pickup game in the middle of the summer in Fresno, California, was just pretty incredible.
Scott Brooks joining me for another few moments. You know, we talked about two of your guys, John Wall. What about Bradley Beal? When you look at the season, when you look at this season, he's been asked to do a lot of different things this year. What do you make of everything you've thrown at him, how he's handled it, and the way he played?
He's, I mean, no question, he's top 10 player in the league. He has done everything and then more of what I've asked, and he's had to do a lot. I mean, like I said, John's missed a lot of games in the last three seasons. So it's given him an opportunity to grow his game, but it also gave him a lot of responsibility, and he's handled it well. It's shocking that he did not make the All-Team this year, but you know what? He'll make the All-NBA team in my mind, and he should. The guy gets double-teamed every night and still puts up 30, and he any given night, 5 or 6, 7 assists. But he leads our team. He's a great player, a great person. I'm happy for his success. I'm glad I'm his coach.
Scott, how much time do you think that you and the players would need to get back into game shape and be ready to play meaningful games if and when that were to happen?
Well, hopefully it happens, Jim. I mean, we all want to play. We want to make sure everything is good and before we move forward. The players have been pretty good. I know our players have been in pretty good shape. They're doing a lot, but it's going to take some time to get in basketball shape. Hopefully everybody's ready. And I always tell our players, be ready, don't get ready. And I think our players have done a good job. It's going to at least, I don't know, I hate to put a number on it, 10 days, 2 weeks, depending on how guys are in shape. But like I said, I just hope it happens. We'll figure that out next.
I was going to ask you this. Sorry to jump in there, Scott. I was going to say, finally, you've got the vets, but then you've got a real young roster. I mean, a big chunk of your roster is 24 or younger, and you're pushing these guys to be intense. Have you seen more of the on-court intensity this season and the effort that you've been looking to see?
Yeah, you know what? That's what I love about our team. I knew we were going to have a tough year, but I wanted to accomplish a couple of things. I wanted to make sure that these guys understand professionalism. And I think that's the most important thing. Professionalism means a lot of different things, being on time, nutrition, sleep, being a good teammate, being a good citizen. Those are all important things. And then really, and then after that, I wanted to make sure that we played hard every night. There's a couple of games that we just did not have it, but we played pretty hard every night. With all of our young players, I thought we established a pretty good foundation going forward. John comes back healthy next season. Brad plays the way he has played, and our guys continue to develop. I feel that we could be pretty good next year.
Good night now!